Let's review the debate to this point. In stage one, defenders of the implied warranty of habitability argue that it will force landlords to do their moral duty to help poor tenants. In stage two, the critics argue that, on the contrary, the implied warranty of habitability will result in an increase in rents and a decrease in the quantity of apartments available. In stage three, another group of economists accepts the general framework of analysis popularized by Judge Posner and Professor Komisar, but argues that Posner and Komisar have drawn the pertinent graphs improperly. The leading article in this vein is by Bruce Ackerman. Judge Wright himself relies on this article in his later opinion in the Diamond Housing case. Ackerman argues that we should redraw the lines on the chart on the basis of the following assumptions. First, it's hard for landlords to convert non-residential property to residential property and vice versa. Suppose, for example, that a building in our hypothetical city is currently being used for boutiques, ice cream parlors, and so forth. Now imagine that residential rents rise. The owner of the building might want to convert it to apartments in order to make more money. Ackerman argues that it's hard to do so, meaning that it's quite costly to do so. Conversely, if a building is currently being used for apartments and market rents drop, it's difficult and expensive for the owner to convert it to some other purpose. We represent this circumstance on the chart by drawing the supply curves as steep lines. As always, the gap between the two lines represents the cost of fixing up lousy apartments so they comply with the code. Note that this way of drawing the graphs captures the fact that significant changes in rent levels result in only slight changes in the quantity of housing. The second assumption embodied in Ackerman's altered views of the housing market is that with respect to lousy, meaning sub-code housing, tenants tend to be very cost sensitive. A slight rise in the price of such housing will lead them to double up or leave the jurisdiction. Put differently, the demand for lousy housing is highly elastic. Slight changes in the price will have a big effect on the quantity demanded. For that reason, the demand curve for sub-code apartments is nearly flat. The third of Ackerman's assumptions is that people on the margin, meaning people toward the right-hand side of our chart, value improvements in their housing very little. To be sure, they would like to have better apartments, but the amount of money they would be able and willing to spend for the upgrade is very low. That assumption is indicated on our chart by the narrow gap between the two demand curves on the right-hand side. The circumstance that underlies both the second and the third of Ackerman's assumptions is poverty. The people we're talking about are very poor. They just don't have the money to pay for much for housing. As a result, modest increases in price will have a big impact on them, forcing them in one way or another to leave their apartments. The fourth assumption in Ackerman's altered view of the housing market is that the people who are able and willing to pay the most for subcode apartments are able and willing to pay quite a bit for improvements in those subcode apartments. This assumption is captured by the length of the red line. For the reasons we considered in stage two of this debate, these inframarginal tenants are not willing and able to pay quite as much as it would cost the landlords to supply the amenities necessary to bring the apartments up to code. That amount, the amount the landlords have to pay, is represented by the blue line. But note that our inframarginal tenants are able and willing to pay almost as much as it would cost the landlords to supply the necessary improvements. Why are they able to spend so much more than the tenants on the right-hand side of the chart? Because they are less desperately poor. What's the effect of altering these in these respects, the assumptions in the graph? Ackerman argues that it will make the following differences. First, if and when the implied warranty of habitability is imposed and effectively enforced, it will cause a shift in the equilibrium point in just the manner Posner and Komisar originally suggested. Notice that the price goes up and the quantity goes down. Observe, however, that the magnitude of the rent increase is very small. So notice that P2 is only slightly above P1 in this graph. That's the first of Ackerman's observations. Second, the imposition and effective enforcement of the implied warranty of habitability will increase consumer surplus. And this requires a little bit more explanation. Consumer surplus consists of the differences between the amount that each tenant places upon the housing that he's enjoying and the amount that he or she is paying for it. Total consumer surplus is just the sum of the surpluses enjoyed by all of the individual tenants in the market. That total consumer surplus in the market for subcode apartments, meaning the market as it exists before the imposition of the implied warranty, is represented by the blue shaded area in this graph. Notice that it's the sum of the vertical distances between, for each tenant, the demand curve, meaning the amount that each tenant is able and willing to pay, represented by the dark blue line, and the price that they are in fact paying, represented by the purple line. On the assumptions embodied in this graph, the consumer surplus associated with subcode apartments, as you'll notice, is fairly small. Things improve dramatically when we come to code-compliant apartments. Now the consumer surplus is much larger. In other words, the difference between the amounts that tenants are able and willing to pay for code-compliant apartments and the prices that they actually do pay is quite large. Why? What produces this benefit? The main cause is the combination of the two assumptions embedded in Ackerman's model. The fact that the two demand curves are very close together at the margin, meaning on the right-hand side of the chart, and the fact that they are quite far apart near the y-axis on the left-hand side of the chart produces this very large consumer surplus. So things look pretty rosy from Ackerman's standpoint, with one exception. Notice that on the bottom of the page, Ackerman acknowledges the same effect emphasized by Posner and Komisar. Specifically, the quantity of apartments supplied will diminish upon effective enforcement of the implied warranty. So notice that Q2 is significantly to the left of Q1 on this chart. What can we do about this? Well, Ackerman's suggestion is this is where government subsidies come in. Public housing can and should be made available to remedy the diminution in the supply of private housing, either through government-constructed housing or through Section 8 vouchers.